The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Jenna Ellis Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There has never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
As a constitutional law attorney, former senior legal advisor and personal counsel to President Donald J. Trump, Jenna Ellis believes in the rule of law and the importance of integrity in our elections. And she's ready to tackle the big cultural and legal issues facing America. This is the Jenna Ellis Show. Here is your host, Jenna Ellis.
Is Donald Trump getting arrested? Well, hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Jenna Ellis Show. I'm Jenna Ellis, and these are the kinds of headlines that you would think you would only see in a totally third world country that doesn't have law and order, that doesn't have a U.S. Constitution, and certainly doesn't have due process. But this is where we are at in American society when a former sitting president who is running for re-election in 2024 is the object of political persecution and such a manipulation of law enforcement that a DA that is funded by George Soros is manipulating himself into a legal pretzel just to try to render an indictment and arrest of Donald Trump. So people are rightly outraged about this, and we are going to talk here today about everything you need to know about the possible pending Donald Trump indictment right after this. Legacy Precious Metals is the company that I trust to give you good and patient counsel for investing in your retirement. The Biden administration has caused a financial crisis, and they have no clue how to fix it. Oil prices have skyrocketed, and when oil prices go up, not only do your expenses go up, but the cost of transportation and shipping spikes, leading the prices of goods to rise. And we are already seeing record inflation. That's the last thing that we need. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. If all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you may be vulnerable. So gold is one of the very best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your own gold. It's real, it's physical, and it's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Call Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com, where you can download the free investor's guide. You can also go to my Facebook page, Jenna Ellis. I am a public figure on Facebook. You need to start your retirement account even if you're in your 20s or 30s. There is always a great time to protect your retirement and invest, just like you want to protect your health over the long term. So go to Legacy Precious Metals at LegacyPMInvestments.com or call 866-528-1903. So will Donald Trump get arrested tomorrow, and will he even be indicted? Well, my guess is that he's not going to get arrested tomorrow, only for procedural process reasons. So we've learned that the grand jury out of Manhattan is listening to a final witness today, which happens to be Robert Costello, who is one of Trump's former lawyers and also one of Rudy Giuliani's attorneys. And so that will take some time. And whether or not the grand jury can wrap up and actually deliberate and render an indictment that would then procedurally go through all of the processes to then actually be executed on Donald Trump, I don't think is going to happen in the next 24 hours. But that remains to be seen. So will there be an indictment or arrest of Donald Trump? So again, I don't think that we are going to see that perp walk for a couple of reasons. I know all of the leftists are just crying. They're screaming at the sky right now because they have all of this schadenfreude, which is all about saying, we just really want to see Donald Trump in handcuffs. We so desperately want to see that perp walk. What does that tell you about the level of confidence that the Democrats have in the American system and their fidelity to the U.S. Constitution, when they would rather see a political opponent in handcuffs than they would actual due process. Well, that's the Democratic Party for you today. But I don't think that that's going to happen for a couple of reasons. First, the timeline, for one thing, but even eventually, I don't think that's going to happen because Alvin Bragg, who is the current Manhattan district attorney, knows that his political career right now is in utter shambles. If he even thinks about continuing this indictment, he is torching his credibility that is already tenuous because everybody knows that he's a George Soros-backed prosecutor. He's revived this very legally dubious case that the feds declined to prosecute, that his predecessor, Cyrus Vance, also declined to prosecute, and he is manipulating himself into a legal pretzel to try to get a misdemeanor elevated to a felony and piggyback off of federal statutes onto state statutes in a way that have never been utilized or this legal theory ever implemented before so that he can simply get Trump. So if the only goal of this, as pretty much anybody is going to suggest, and even the mainstream media will have to acknowledge, if that perp walk happens, then everyone is going to rightfully say, this was just about the court of public opinion, and this was just about this photo op. But second, President Trump's current lawyers have said openly and publicly that they are talking to law enforcement in Manhattan and collaborating with Secret Service, because, of course, President Trump still has that protection, and going through all of the proper legal channels if an indictment is rendered. So typically what happens if you have a warrantless arrest at the scene of an alleged crime, then the law enforcement officer can, under some circumstances, execute an arrest right in the moment without a warrant. But when a warrant is then actually executed, or an indictment is handed down, then that doesn't always, and generally with somebody high profile like that, doesn't result in an actual perp walk arrest. The person has the ability to come and turn themselves in. And from what President Trump's attorneys are already saying, that suggests to me that there's already a deal in place and a mechanism that will allow President Trump to simply go to face the indictment in Manhattan without all of the theatrics and the photo ops. So will there even be an indictment? Well, that's the million-dollar question. Should there be an indictment? Absolutely not. This should not be a weaponization of the Manhattan District Attorney's office that is targeting Donald Trump. The role and responsibility of a prosecutor is to do whatsoever justice requires, not to go and target a political opponent and weaponize your office of government to simply seek out what crime they can possibly come up with to tag you with. But that's exactly what's happening here. Because remember the history. Cyrus Vance, who was the DA before Alvin Bragg, decided not to move forward on this alleged hush money payment to Stormy Daniels. This, of course, did result in the conviction and disbarment of Michael Cohen, who was one of Trump's former attorneys that was responsible for this payment. But that's a totally and completely separate case. They are having to elevate this from a misdemeanor to a felony to even try to wrap their legal tentacles around this. It is a bastardization of the legal system and of the justice system, and very clearly is simply politically motivated to target a political opponent. So the feds declined to prosecute this. This is even outside the statute of limitations. But according to Alvin Bragg now, the statute of limitations is extended if it's a felony. It's also extended if the person has moved out of the state, which Donald Trump has moved to Florida. And apparently, like, COVID adds a year onto this because, of course, it does, right? And so all of this is procedurally questionable at best. And anyone with common sense, whether or not you are a Donald Trump fan, you're a Republican, a Democrat, whatever, you should be very, very concerned about the weaponization of government against political opponents. But here's what I think is actually going on. I think the Democrats know that Donald Trump is not going to be stopped from his candidacy for re-election for 2024, regardless of whether he's indicted or not. Now, historically, if a candidate, especially on the presidential level, was even under a cloud of suspicion around an indictment, that would be enough for them to say, all right, I'm exiting the race and I'm going to withdraw. because we, the people, generally believed in the legitimacy of law enforcement, and we believed that they weren't just politically motivated. So there had to be some there if there was a potential forthcoming indictment. But in the post-Trump persecution era, where we have all survived and lived through all of the witch hunts and the hoax after hoax after hoax, nobody trusts the integrity of Democrat-funded law enforcement anymore on the federal level or the state level. So I don't think that the Democrats are actually doing this in order to get Trump to concede the race. What they're doing is the same thing they did during the Mueller investigation and the very first Russia collusion hoax. Now, we had Spygate even before that. That was not successful. But then remember, the Mueller investigation and the whole Russia collusion narrative lasted for nearly 2 years. What that did was try to effectively drain President Trump's war chest for re-election in the 2020 campaign. Now, President Trump, as the then sitting incumbent, had the support of large donors of the RNC, and the campaign still spent, I think it was over $1 billion. But the war chest was severely diminished because he had to fight and mount all of these legal challenges from not only White House counsel, of course, which is a separate thing as, that's obviously taxpayer funded, but in terms of his own personal counsel from the campaign and his own personal resources. So now, though, when he is facing a non-incumbent open primary, of course, he is the presumptive nominee, and there are a lot of people that think that he should get a second opportunity to reclaim what was rightfully his second term, and people are free and voters are free to agree or disagree with that, but it is an open primary. He is not the incumbent. So the RNC really doesn't have any obligation to support him financially like they did in the 2020 re-election campaign. And in fact, Ronna McDaniel and a lot of the RNC would rightfully suggest that they can't appear to throw the primary one way or the other. And I think that everyone who supports Donald Trump would also agree that they don't want to see the RNC throw the nomination for someone else that's not named Donald Trump. So the RNC is in a very difficult position here. But likely they're just going to say, hey, we are going to let the primary occur and have the voters decide like they did in 2016, which was the last open Republican primary. So President Trump now has a campaign funding issue. A lot of very high-level donors are actually pledging their support to other candidates, most notably Governor Ron DeSantis out of Florida. Now, he has not announced his campaign for president yet, but a lot of people are speculating, and I think rightfully so, that he is going to announce probably after the Florida legislative session. That would be my guess. But he has not announced yet, nor does he have to announce at any particular moment. The Trump PAC, interestingly, slapped him and his campaign with a so-called ethics violation that says, hey, he's just running a shadow campaign and he's getting a lot of donors and he's running for president without actually saying he's running for president. Well, I think that that's a little bit disingenuous, and I certainly would not have advised President Trump and his PAC to do that, mainly because not only is that, obviously just looks like President Trump is threatened by Ron DeSantis, but it also is a little disingenuous because President Trump was basically running for president for the last 2 years before he announced. So obviously the same Florida law doesn't apply because he isn't and wasn't a current Florida elected official. But the issue here is still the same. And Ron DeSantis is under no obligation to declare his candidacy until he does. And so right now, he has rightly said he is the governor of Florida. And everyone else can speculate, they can start PACs, they can pledge their loyalty or whatever to Ron DeSantis, but he's not an announced candidate yet. And that matters in terms of the law. It matters also in terms of campaign finance and all of these other ethics rules. So when these donors are already going to Ron DeSantis, even though he hasn't announced, that is a campaign finance and funding problem for Donald Trump. Now, think about this, is the base that pledges their fidelity and support to Donald Trump regardless, and the MAGA base who didn't even come out and really support him financially, and a lot of the people like the January 6th defendants that, you know, there have been a lot of legal defense funds. But are we really suggesting that these people are going to be the ones that fund his campaign to the tune of $1 billion plus? No, I think that a lot of people, MAGA, the ultra MAGA included, they are going to give as much as they can to President Trump. And if that's what they want to do, they absolutely should. But President Trump needs top dollar donors. A lot of those are going to Ron DeSantis and other candidates. And I think that the Manhattan DA likely knows this. The Democrat National Committee certainly knows this. So they know that it's going to be a financing issue for the Trump reelection campaign if they're going to make him squander and spend so much on a necessary but ultimately politically motivated legal defense. Now, that bothers me as an American citizen and as someone who wants to be able to vote for a candidate regardless of any of the other political ridiculous optics or the tactics of the opposing party. I don't want the Democrats to just drain President Trump's war chest and not allow him to effectively mount a serious campaign just because they're so afraid that he might be reelected. That is shameful. That's un-American. That is not how our system of government, and certainly not how our free and fair elections are supposed to work. But I think that that is the real motivation, among other things, of course, the political optics, because it's just never a good thing when you're a candidate and have an indictment around your campaign. That's just never a good thing for moderates or potential, undecideds. Not a good thing. But I think the base motivation is that the Democrats know that this is going to really challenge the funding of the Trump 2024 campaign. So if this matters to you, donate to President Trump if you want to. Donate to his campaign. But also call your sitting members of Congress. Call Kathy Hochul, who is the sitting governor of New York, who has not condemned this overtly malicious and outrageous prosecution, and encourage Representative Jim Jordan, who is chairing the Weaponization of Government Committee, that will hopefully have some really good legislation out of this committee that should be bipartisan. This is not how we conduct ourselves in America. The left likes to say that, well, no one is above the law. Well, no one is below the law either. And what I mean by that is that, yes, no one is above the law, whether your name is Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, but no one is below the law either, that if your name happens to be Donald Trump, you don't get the same due process and constitutional protections against malicious prosecution that everyone else and every other presidential candidate has gotten. So I think that this is an outrageous exercise in malicious persecution and weaponization of government. So the last thing that we need to talk about, at least for today, and we'll see how the story goes, and we'll definitely follow this here on the Jenna Ellis Show. You can also listen to my radio show from 8 to 9 a.m. Eastern, or the podcast version that goes out after at AFR.net. That's American Family Radio Network.net. So AFR.net. You can follow us also at Jenna Ellis AM. And you can, of course, follow me on social media. Click subscribe on this podcast wherever you are streaming. That really helps us. But it also helps you because then you never miss an episode as soon as it drops. So definitely subscribe on Rumble, well over and above YouTube, but also wherever you stream. So the last thing, though, is that Governor Ron DeSantis, who, of course, is in everyone's mind already a presidential candidate, but he is not, in fact, a presidential candidate, had not until today responded to any of the media stories or President Trump's Truth Social postings that an imminent indictment and arrest was forthcoming. Of course, he is the governor of the state of Florida, where Donald Trump happens to be a resident and citizen of the state of Florida. But let's think about this from the perspective of what that actually obligates Ron DeSantis to do in this instance. Well, a lot of people are suggesting that he should refuse to extradite President Trump, and there should be the standoff at Mar-a-Lago, and, you know, don't ever go up to New York again, and all of these things. Well, Donald Trump's own attorneys have said that they don't want that, and they're going to comply with law enforcement. So an extradition order and anything of this nature probably won't even come across Ron DeSantis's desk. I have not heard a genuine speculation or opinion that's legally sound that would ask any substantive legal question about the current power of a sitting governor of the state of Florida to interact with this in any way, shape, or form. So what does that obligate Ron DeSantis to do? Well, I think he was actually very tactful by not responding to any of the speculation. He's not just being given to responding to the news cycle with this knee-jerk reaction. And you know, that's kind of novel, right? Over the last few years, when we have come as a Republican base to be so accustomed to Donald Trump responding to everything. Now, that's Trump's style, and that's totally fine. I personally loved that about Donald Trump. I still love that about him. But I think that it's a different style, and it shows a much more reserved leadership and strength to be able to wait and see about the facts. We talk on the show all the time, wait and see. The facts need to come out first. And I think it was actually incredibly wise of Ron DeSantis not to just run out there and speculate with his own opinion. He's not a political commentator. That's what I'm paid to do. I get to comment on all of these things with legal expertise, with opinions, and with my own personal comments and commentary. That's great. That's what commentating is for. But for a sitting governor, what does it benefit him other than to try to bow to the Twitter mob who is suggesting that even though he's not a currently announced presidential candidate, he has some obligation to weigh in on this, you know, very localized weaponization of law enforcement? Now, of course, he doesn't agree with it, and he came out today and said that. But I don't think he needed to say that in the first 5 minutes or even the first 72 hours of this. This isn't a moment that he actually has the power to do anything about it. Notably, no other Republican governors were asked by the MAGA base to weigh in on this. Sarah Sanders, who was President Trump's former press secretary and the current sitting governor of Arkansas, she didn't weigh in on this. She still hasn't, to my knowledge. Everybody's okay with that, but they're expecting Ron DeSantis to act like a presidential candidate like Donald Trump when he hasn't even announced yet. And by the way, isn't that exactly what the Trump PAC's ethics violation is accusing him of doing? So why would he go and simply give more credence to that particular allegation? I think he's being very smart. But he did hold a press conference today on what he's actually getting done in the free state of Florida. And I would add that he is the only current Republican governor who is actually doing something meaningful about the Soros-funded district attorneys. Remember, he is the one that relieved the state attorney of his post who had said that he was going to decline to prosecute any of the offenses that he didn't feel he personally agreed with under this kind of woke mentality, right? Well, Ron DeSantis said, hey, you can't do that. That's not part of your job description. You don't have that broad sweeping discretion to say you don't personally like a law of the legislature, so you're going to act like a petty tyrant. And Ron DeSantis relieved him of his post. He was a Soros-funded DA, according to DeSantis's office and the reports that that have surfaced. So that's actually doing something meaningful about this. I mean, what do people expect, that Ron DeSantis is going to go and try to get rid of a Soros prosecutor up in the state of New York? Well, no. So what are people actually suggesting that DeSantis do? Well, they're either going to suggest he act like a presidential candidate, which simply plays into the ethics violation allegation, or they're going to suggest that he needs to get out and rally with Trump and he needs to stand with Trump, which only further feeds into the base. And that actually is exactly, I think, what Donald Trump wants. He has openly said that he wants Ron DeSantis's loyalty. So for a wide variety of reasons, especially his fidelity to his own current elected office, he hasn't said he's going to run for another one. Ron DeSantis waited. And today, in a press conference on something totally different, where he's talking about the business of the state of Florida, a reporter asks him a question. Now, he could have chosen to decline that. He could have evaded, could have said no comment on it. But because he was asked in the midst of a press conference, he openly responded. I want you to listen to his entire response, which is only a couple of minutes, but not the cherry-picked little quotes that a lot of people on social media, or obviously the mainstream media, are going to cherry-pick to try to frame his response. This is what he actually said.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Megan from the Florida Standard.
We wanted to know what your thoughts are on the rumored Trump indictment, and if you have any role in it, if charges are brought on him, would you have any role in extradition to New York?
So I've seen rumors swirl. I have not seen any facts yet, and so I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. The Manhattan district attorney is a Soros-funded prosecutor. And so he, like other Soros-funded prosecutors, they weaponize their office to impose a political agenda on society at the expense of the rule of law and public safety. He has downgraded over 50% of the felonies to misdemeanors. He says he doesn't want to even have jail time for the vast, vast majority of crimes. And what we've seen in Manhattan is we've seen the crime rate go up, and we've seen citizens become less safe. And so you're talking about this situation with, and look, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to is that if you have a prosecutor who is ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction, and he chooses to go back many, many years ago to try to use something about porn star hush money payments, you know, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda and weaponizing the office. And I think that that's fundamentally wrong. I also think it's important to point out when you're talking about these Soros-funded prosecutors, yes, they may do a high-profile politicized prosecution, and that's bad, but the real victims are ordinary New Yorkers, ordinary Americans in all these different jurisdictions, that they get victimized every day because of the reckless political agenda that these Soros DAs bring to their job. They ignore crime and they empower criminals, and that hurts people, hurts a lot of people every single day. These Soros district attorneys are a menace to society, and I'm just glad that I'm the only governor in the country that's actually removed one from office during my tenure. And in terms of we are not involved in this, won't be involved in this. I have no interest in getting involved in some type of manufactured circus by some Soros DA, okay? He's trying to do a political spectacle. He's trying to virtue signal for his base. I've got real issues I got to deal with here in the state of Florida. We're obviously shutting down CBDC, which is important. We've got so many things pending in front of the legislature. I've got to spend my time on issues that actually matter to people. I can't spend my time worrying about things of that nature. So we're not going to be involved in it in any way. I'm fighting for Floridians, and I'm fighting back against Biden. That's what I do every single day. Yep.
Governor, another question in terms of that. Are you aware if there has been any communication between Florida law enforcement and New York authorities if they do indict and President Trump does not go to New York for arraignment? Discussions about how he may be arraigned here in Florida since he resides here. Are you aware of any?
I'm not aware of anything.
I think that was a brilliant response. I think it was very gubernatorial. It was very federalist. It was very calculated. It was very leadership oriented. It was exactly what he should have said. He called out the Soros funded prosecutors. He said this is a weaponization of law enforcement that he doesn't agree with. But then in his capacity as the governor, he says, I'm not being asked to get involved. There's nothing. He's not involved. His office is not involved. And he said, and I'm not going to get involved with political theater because he is telling the American people, I'm not just going to take an optics type of challenge just to get my name out there further. I'm going to focus on the business of the state of Florida. Now, I have to ask you, for all of the people here, whether you're Trump supporters, you're DeSantis supporters, you're Democrats, you're undecided, whoever, I have to ask you, isn't that the type of response that we would actually like to see in a president? Someone who is not just out for the photo ops, who is not just taking every opportunity to jump into the fray and to get media hits and to dominate the news cycle and trend on Twitter. He's actually saying, nah, I'm not getting involved. I'm focusing on my job. That to me says a brilliant, resilient leader and someone who's very confident in his own position. And that's someone I think that a lot of people in the GOP base will want to support. So overall, I think that this nomination is President Trump's to lose. I think that an indictment will further solidify his base, but may actually be damaging among the moderates and the undecideds, and certainly the establishment Republicans. And I also think that it remains to be seen how formidable Ron DeSantis does become if and when he announces. A lot of donors are going in his direction. A lot of polling, whether or not you see the polls, remains to be seen when he actually announces. And I think we're seeing a lot of very wise decisions from him. So these are two very formidable candidates. And I, for one, am very excited about a primary challenge. I think that Donald Trump is an excellent candidate. I would love to see him get another 4 years. But I'm also very excited that Ron DeSantis is someone who matches the passion and the courage and the leadership and the policy initiatives of Donald Trump. That's actually a good thing. For so long, Donald Trump has been saying, I'm the only one out here. I'm the one standing between you and a disaster of America. Isn't it great, actually, that we have a wider bench that we can say, okay, we actually have a choice? Because, I mean, look at the Democrats. They don't have a single person that they can put up in office. That's why Joe Biden hasn't even announced yet. He's so weak and feeble. But who else are they going to run? They have literally no one. I'm really proud that our party and the conservatives in general have both a Donald Trump and a Ron DeSantis and a Vivek Ramaswamy, who I hope gets on the debate stage, and a lot of other genuinely America First champions that are standing up and they're running for political office on not just the presidential level, but everywhere in between, from the federal level, the state and local level, to these education school boards, all of these things. We are getting engaged as citizens, and I love to see it. So we're going to be talking a lot more, and I know that there will be a ton of opinions about this one way or the other, about Trump versus DeSantis. Sure, let them have that fight. That's what primaries are for. But we need to keep our eye on one thing. We have to win the White House in 2024. So I'm making this endorsement today. Yep, big news here. I am going to vote for whoever wins the GOP nomination, and I want to see them all duke it out. And I will pledge that I'm going to vote for whoever gets that Republican nomination, because that person absolutely has to win over any of the Democrats. We can't allow a primary to shield and distract our focus from the real enemy. That is the leftists. That's the Democratic Party. That is the woke, progressive, hateful, insane policies. This is normal versus crazy, as Sarah Sanders said. And I'm going to vote for normal, whoever is the victor of the primary. My good friend Mike Lindell, as you know, is a sponsor of The Jenna Ellis Show, and his latest offer is for the MyPillow towels. Towels just don't seem to dry you anymore. They feel soft and lotiony in the stores, but you get them home and they just don't absorb very well. Mike Lindell at MyPillow found that around 2006, towels actually changed forever. They started importing them and adding softeners and other things to the cotton that made them feel good, but they just didn't work. So he found the best towel company right here in the USA. They have proprietary technology to create towels that feel soft, but actually work. We all love stuff that works. And they are all made in the USA with cotton, and they come with the MyPillow 60-day money-back guarantee. So right now, for a six-piece set, which is two bath, two hand towels, and two washcloths, regularly $109.99, now only $39.99. I have several packages of these. I love them. They come in a variety of colors. So definitely go and get that today. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener specials, get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the towels, but you have to enter the promo code Jenna. That's J-E-N-N-A. Or you can call 1-800-564-8475 for the great radio specials. Mention your promo code Jenna and go to MyPillow.com. And of course, we all want to support Mike Lindell because he's such a great American as well. So joining me now is Judd Saul, who's the executive director of Equipping the Persecuted. And Judd, this is such an important topic because I think that for so many Americans, even though, of course, there are a lot of topics that are really important to us and to our American experience in our life, we certainly don't suffer the same type of persecution and the traumas that's going on in Nigeria for Christians. So what does this actually look like there on the ground, and what are Nigerian Christians truly experiencing?
Well, you have to start from a place of extreme poverty. So 80% of Nigeria's population is suffering extreme poverty. And this is poverty in world terms, in African terms, not American terms. Meaning the average Nigerian, a good job is considered $100 a month for income. So you're starting from that premise, but then you have Christians who have lived there for a long time, been very faithful. And what you've seen over the last 13 years is a major increase in genocide against Christians, where the radical Muslims are conquering territory from the north, one village at a time. And they are saying, either convert to Islam, join us, if you want to continue to live here, or we're going to kill you. And systematically, that is what they're facing. And we're up to over something like 13 Christians are killed daily in Nigeria because of this persecution.
Wow, that is so sad. And, you know, this reminds me of some of the other countries like Iran, for example, that they claim to have religious freedom, but it's a freedom to go along with what the government says you can support in terms of your religious freedom. And I think for a lot of Americans, we can certainly understand, because we're all very concerned that our own government will eventually get there in terms of persecution towards Christians. But we're not experiencing what Nigerians are at this moment. So why did your group and your ministry, Equipping the Persecuted, decide to focus specifically on Nigeria? And what type of relief are you bringing to the Christians there?
I had started going to Nigeria about 10 years ago, working with another mission. It was a great mission. They were gospel focused. But as I saw the attacks increase, I noticed that there was a lot of missions that were afraid to get involved in these areas because it'd be too political, might jeopardize what they have doing there. And I just looked around and I started asking my fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, I said, what if somebody was here to respond to attacks within 48 hours? What if someone was to teach you basic security awareness skills, to help save lives? And they said, we need this now, we need this yesterday. And so that's when I started Equipping the Persecuted. And we've been able to, in a region that we operate in, it's in about four states, we're able to respond within 48 hours to aid right after attacks. That's food, that's medicine, helping pay for surgeries, helping widows and families find places to live. That's what we've been working on as far as our aid goes. But secondly, we're also trying to work on preventative measures and empowering and educating local villagers and essentially telling them, you don't have to put up with this. There are ways that you can help protect your village, and there's also a way to save lives.
Yeah, and this, you know, this is the type of ministry truly that Christians should be engaged in, and this type of humanitarian effort, but also bringing the gospel of Christ to countries like Nigeria, and of course supporting the Christians that are already on the ground. It reminds me how ill-equipped government is to do this same kind of humanitarian effort, because, right, you know, if we're relying on Congress to spend money, and, you know, there will ultimately be a lot more political contemplations than what the church and individual Christians like you with these types of ministries can provide. So how can people be engaged and support this ministry? Because I think a lot of Christians are so frustrated with what we see in terms of the lack of church responsibility to take care of the widows and orphans like the Bible mm-hmm. commands. And so how can people get involved and help your ministry in truly being the hands and feet of Christ?
You can go to our website, equippingthepersecuted.org, sign up, partner with our organization. We're encouraging people to, if you can spare it, donate $20 a month or more to help our efforts. But we also need prayer. We need prayer for our persecuted brothers and sisters. We need prayer for safety, prayer for our team. And also, not just donating to our organization, there's actions you can take politically, locally here in the area by contacting your congressman, your senator, and telling them to raise awareness and to pay attention to what's happened in Nigeria. There's a lot of things that have happened politically, especially since the Biden administration took over, that have made things worse for Christians on the ground in Nigeria. And we need our, they look at our politics here in the U.S. as if it's their president in Nigeria. That is how much they pay attention here, and that's how big of a difference it makes. So people can also take action politically.
Yeah, and so speaking of some of the things that the Biden administration has done, what about Christian refugee status? Are you working with Christians in Nigeria to actually get them away from, you know, some of this terrorism and some of these attacks and concerns on the ground there? And how helpful has the Biden administration or the Department of Homeland Security been or not been?
They haven't been helpful at all. In fact, when Biden took office, they took Nigeria off the terror watch list. When that happened, we saw more attacks increase. And it empowered radical Islam up north to further on their attacks and to continue to take more territory. And then all while that's going on, Christians are begging for help and looking to the United States, hey, help us politically. But what happens is they sent Stacey Abrams down in the last Nigerian presidential election to help them out. You can see what happened there.
Yeah.
And so it's an awful situation. And as far as refugee status goes, we see this country allowing in immigrants from radical Islamic countries into the U.S. Yes, they're suffering, they're hurting, but we also have a huge batch of Christians in Nigeria that are suffering and hurting. And the embassy has pretty much locked up. They have locked up the ability for Nigerians to get to the U.S. Easily, and especially Christians. You notice that Christians are frowned upon when it comes to their visas coming to the U.S., where more Islamic Nigerians get better access.
Wow. Well, if the Biden administration's response is to send in Stacey Abrams, I think that tells us all that we need to know about the help that isn't getting to Nigeria and to the Christians there. So the website is equippingthepersecuted.org. And I hope that everyone who's listening to this at least goes and looks at that website and prayerfully consider supporting this ministry, supporting what they're doing there on the ground. And everyone also can and should be praying for our fellow Christians across the world. Pray for the ministry of Equipping the Persecuted. And that is the biggest thing, of course, that we can do is pray for protection and pray for the steadfastness of the Christians that are facing the worst kind of attacks and the worst kind of testing of their faith. And I hope and pray, Judd, that this doesn't come to the United States in the same form that it is in Nigeria. But while there are Christians in the world presently today, contemporaneously with us, that don't have the same freedoms and liberties and constitutional protections that we still do have here in the United States, I think it is incumbent upon all of us to do as much as we can. And so go to equippingthepersecuted.org. And if you feel compelled, you can give a $20 or more donation to help what Judd Saul and his team are doing on the ground in Nigeria. And so, Judd, thank you so much. And, you know, how have you personally seen this ministry grow? And with some of the Christians that you have helped, you know, maybe let's just, you know, and kind of on more of an encouraging note of some of the positive stories and things that you have been able to help with.
We've been able to touch over 140,000 lives in the short time we've been around over the last 3 years. And one of the most rewarding things for us is when we come into an area, when we bring aid and we see them, we look them in the eye. One of the things, and this is common when we go to help people, is they say, we thought the world has forgotten about us. Mm-hmm. We thought the world has forgotten about us, and you have brought us hope. And that is why God has called us. We've answered their prayers, unbeknownst to us, unbeknownst to them, that we've been able to answer their prayers on the ground by helping them out. And that is what keeps me going back.
That's amazing. And, you know, being that hope and letting people know that they aren't forgotten, and certainly Christ has not forgotten them, but we as fellow Christians should not forget about them either. And you are doing the work of Christ. So it's equippingthepersecuted.org. And Judd Saul, thank you so much for joining me today and for the ministry that you are doing. This is so important, even though, you know, so much we just focus here in America on the things that are going on in Washington and kind of this myopic focus mm-hmm. on America and our own personal interests. And we can't forget the persecuted Christians in Nigeria and other countries across the world that are experiencing such intense persecution for standing up firm for their faith. So thank you for what you're doing and for your ministry.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you. God bless you and God bless your ministry.
Thank you.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.